You're welcoming Krishna into your home. And we join you in welcoming Krishna into your home. It's a long journey to get Krishna to be willing to come to your home. One of the rules for householders that Srila Prabhupada taught is that householders should receive uninvited guests, or unexpected guests, I should say, unexpected guests, in such a way that they're treated like they're Lord Narayana. You've heard that before? Unexpected guests. When they come to your door, treat them so nicely as you would treat the Supreme Lord, because who knows, maybe it's the Supreme Lord. And if not, no harm, because the Supreme Lord's instruction is being followed to treat them as good as Him. So it's win if you do this and win if you do that. What to speak of if you invite the Supreme Lord to your home and He comes and there He is in His literary form, because there's a series of verses in Padma Purana that specifically say this Bhagavat Purana is the literary form of the Lord. There's the deity form of the Lord, a painting that may be the illustration of the form of the Lord, the name form of the Lord, the mantra form of the Lord, and this is the literary form of the Lord. And He's so kind that He'll just sit right in your lap and speak to you just by vibrating the sound. It's Bhagavat Katha, speech in relation to Bhagavan is Bhagavat Katha. Yesterday, so I thought that I'd read a passage, discuss in honor of the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Two things, two points, and illustrated, of course, by Puranic description found in the Bhagavatam. Yesterday evening, we discussed about Kapila Dev and the type of incarnation that Kapila Dev is. Is he's a actually he's both, I checked. He's Lila Avatar Shaktivesh, excuse me. He's a Yuga Avatar. He falls in three categories. Kapila Dev appears at the beginning of Satya Yuga to teach that process of achieving perfection for that age. Dhyan, the process of meditation. Dhyayate. And he's a Shaktivesh avatar. He's a jiva who is empowered by the personality of Godhead. And, I'm thinking something else. So, yesterday I posed the question, why is he teaching meditation when it's through devotional service only? Then one can understand Krishna. The goal of the Vedas is to understand Krishna, according to Bhagavad Gita. So why is he teaching meditation when devotional service is the means? Remember that discussion. So the Satya Yuga process of fixing one's mind upon the personality of Godhead, which is the same as for our process of devotional service given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. One should always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. smartavyasatatam vishnur na vismartam nujata chit. One should never forget him at any time. Always remember Krishna, never forget him at any time. So the process of devotional service taught by Kapila involves Sankhya and meditation, but it leads to unmixed devotional service. Just like the process of devotional service, there's 9 processes of devotional service. Yes? They're taught by Prahlad Maharaj, or mentioned in the 7th canto by Prahlad Maharaj, and one of them is the means by which he achieved perfection. That is, he always remembered the personality of Godhead, and by that he achieved perfection. And so it's devotional service to remember Krishna. That doesn't mean you don't do anything, you just remember Krishna. You do everything you do while doing everything you do, you remember Krishna. He did so many things. And he remembered Krishna. When he was in the classroom with his schoolmates, like the discussion today with the youth group in O'Fallon, he remembered Krishna. When he was being tossed off the cliff by Hiranyakashipu's henchmen, or fed poison, and all those things, that he was remembering Krishna. Doesn't mean you just sit in a cave and remember Krishna. You do so many things and remember Krishna. So, in our age, the discussion last night was, in our age, the best means for coming to that position is by chanting. Because the chanting of Krishna's holy name awakens the propensity, natural propensity, of service. The constitutional position for all souls is service. And in its perfect stage, it's service to the Supreme. And that which is most effective in this age in awakening that service propensity is the chanting of the holy name. That's what Scripture tells us. We're a little slow learners, but that's what Scripture tells us. The potency is there. And so to illustrate that, I wanted to discuss one little passage from Srimad Bhagavatam, to honor and appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is, I'll just say it quickly and then we'll go into it more deeply. The personality that's illustrating this is Uddhava. Do you know who is Uddhava? Do you know who is Uddhava? Yes?
Krishna's friend.
Krishna's friend. Can you say a little bit more? Besides Krishna's friend. He had lots of friends. You're Krishna's friend. Can you think of some additional? Who is Uddhava? Balaram was his brother. Uddhava. What do you know about Uddhava? A whole bunch, right? Say some things about Uddhava. Speak up. Where did he reside? Principally. He resided in Dwarka. Principally. And even before he resided in Dwarka, when Krishna, well, he was a constant companion of Krishna from when he was a little boy. I'll read what the Bhagavatam says, but when he was 5 years old, he was constantly with Krishna. Now, he wasn't in Vrindavan, but he was in his own way. He was a Nitya Siddha devotee, an eternally perfect soul that came to this world to be with Krishna in his pastimes. And he was always serving Krishna, always incessantly serving Krishna with love. I'll read what it says. It's very nice. He wasn't a resident in Vrindavan. Outside of Vrindavan, he was the most intimate of Krishna's associates. Even Arjuna, who was also Krishna's friend. Bhaktosime Sakha Cheti. Sakha means friend. Krishna says to Arjuna, because you're my friend and my devotee, I will explain this to you. Message of Bhagavad Gita. And you'll understand it because of those two reasons. Even more intimate than Arjuna as a friend was Uddhava. There isn't, outside of Vrindavan, there isn't one more intimate to Krishna than Uddhava. He was so intimate that Krishna would turn to him for advice, and whatever Uddhava said, he would do. Now, Krishna doesn't need advice. We need advice, but Krishna doesn't need advice. And he would do whatever Uddhava said. And Uddhava was always right on. Because he knew what Krishna wanted, so he did what Krishna wanted. He said what Krishna wanted, so Krishna did what Krishna wanted by doing what Uddhava said. That's how close they were. He was so intimate with Krishna that Krishna wanted to show Uddhava, just, I want you to see what kind of love the resident of Vrindavan have for me. I want you to experience it. So in order to give him that opportunity to experience that love, he sent him on a go to Vrindavan mission. Right? Krishna wrote a letter to dear gopis from Krishna with love. And Uddhava was the carrier of that message. There's a beautiful scene where Uddhava's reading the message from Krishna to the gopis. And the gopis are hearing like statues, motionless, except the tears streaming down their cheeks, stunned in ecstasy, just hearing Krishna's words, except for one, and that's Srimati Radharani. And she was having this conversation with a bumblebee, insulting the bumblebee. And by insulting the bumblebee, she was insulting Uddhava. And by insulting Uddhava, she was insulting Krishna. Radharani's talked with the bumblebee. It's a very famous part of Bhagavatam. When Uddhava saw that kind of love that the residents of Vrindavan have for Krishna, he wanted to take the dust from the gopi's feet and place it on his head. But he knew that they would be so embarrassed for him to take dust from their feet. So he instead stayed for some time in Vrindavan, underwent austerities so that he could take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so the gopis, when passing by, some dust raised from their feet would land on his grass head and he would receive that benediction from them. That's Uddhava. Maybe some of you have been to Vrindavan and you've done parikrama around Govardhan Hill. Have you? Oh, you should do someday. So when you think it's never going to end and your feet are, you know, hurting, there's still quite some distance to go, you'll come to Uddhava Kund. Uddhava Kund is the place where Uddhava after Krishna's departure, the queens in Dwarka wanted to, they knew that Krishna's love for the residents of Vrindavan, but they had never been to Vrindavan. They heard something about Vrindavan from Rohini. Rohini was the mother of Balaram. And after being in Vrindavan with Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, her husband was Vasudev. And when Vasudev and Devaki went to Dwarka, she went to Dwarka. So these queens were wanting to hear from Rohini about what was it like in Vrindavan. And she knew because she had experienced. But they wanted to first-hand experience, go to Vrindavan. So they asked the grandson of Krishna, who at that time was the king of Vrindavan, under Emperor Maharishi Parikshit, he appointed Krishna's grandson as the king of Vrindavan. Krishna's grandson took the queens to Vrindavan. And when they reached Vrindavan, one of the places they naturally went was Govardhan Hill. And one of the places they went at Govardhan Hill was Uddhava Kund. And to demonstrate to the queens, the grandson of Krishna began kirtan, chanting Krishna's holy name, like we do, chanting Krishna's holy name. And the chanting of Krishna's holy name in Vrindavan, in his appreciation of how much love there was for Krishna in Vrindavan, the kirtan became very ecstatic. And Narada Muni came, and he was playing his veena and dancing, and one by one, so many associates of Krishna, eternal associates of Krishna, appeared. Even those that had left, including Krishna himself, appeared in Vrindavan. And they were dancing and dancing to ecstatic kirtan. Must have been an ecstatic kirtan. And Uddhava appeared, who had been a blade of grass. He was now as Uddhava. And the bodily appearance of Uddhava, not only his mood was like that of Krishna, his appearance was like that of Krishna. His bodily complexion was like Krishna's bodily complexion. And he even wore clothes that resembled the color of Krishna's clothes. But it was very clear. Krishna was the worshipable, and he was Krishna's loving servant. Dear friend and loving servant. So that pastime took place at Uddhava Kund. The kirtan completed and everybody receded, and the queens of Dwarka were very happy. So Uddhava was very dear to Krishna, and I'm going to read a little section from Canto 3, Chapter 2, of how that process of meditation manifested in Dwarpa Yuga. And the same meditation can exist in Kali Yuga. Same meditation can exist in any yuga. It's a principle of devotional service. Always remember Krishna. I'll never forget Krishna. And another thing, in this same section, I want to highlight or illuminate is kind of an existential question, or a chicken and the egg question. Which comes first? You know that one? Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Because without the chicken, there aren't eggs, so chicken comes first, but the chicken comes from an egg, so which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know that question. So which comes first? The seed of devotional service, or devotional service that produces a seed? There's a verse spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I've often wondered about, but this little section answers the wonderment. Pramanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi by Bhakti Lata, Bija. Bija means?
Seed.
Bhakti Lata Bija is the seed of the Bhakti Lata, the Bhakti Creeper. And it, that verse, Lord Chaitanya says, when, by the mercy of, combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, Guru Krishna Prasade by Bhakti Lata Bija, one receives the seed of the Bhakti Creeper while wandering and wandering. Pramanda Brahmite Kona. One may become Bhagavan. Bhagavan is one who receives the mercy of Bhagavan. There's Bhagavan and Bhagavan. The Supreme Lord, and one receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, one receives the seed of bhakti. Very clear. So here's the doubt, or, well, wait a minute. Like last night, I was this polarizing thing. Wait a minute. Love of God, there's another place in Chaitanya Charitamrita which says that Krishna prema, love of God, is already there in the heart of every living entity. Correct? Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabu noi. It's already there. You know, in the plant and the insect and the bird and the fish and the dog and the human and wherever there's a spirit soul, inside the heart of that spirit soul, Krishna prema is there. And it can be awakened. How? Shravanadi. Beginning with shravana. Hearing. Shuddha chitte. Consciousness becomes cleansed by that process. Okay, so which is it? The chicken or the egg? Is devotional service already there in the heart, or does one have to receive devotional service? Should I do it again, or is it clear? It's clear? Anybody want me to do it again? You got it. Okay. So this verse clears it up. Yay. Murder cycle. So we'll go to just some to get to Canto 3, Chapter 2. I'm going to go back to Canto 1, Chapter 13, and It resembles the message in the beginning part of Canto 1, Chapter 13, resembles Mahabharata. Similarly, when the Chapter 13 is Dhritarashtra quits home. Do you know who Dhritarashtra is? Dhritarashtra? Who is he? You're not sure. You don't want to say it wrong, so... He's the elder brother of Pandu and Vidura. He was the blind, should be king, but because he was blind, he couldn't be king. So he always coveted, I want to be king, if I can't be king, let my sons become king, headed by Duryodhana. That's Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra quits home is Chapter 13. And the chapter begins with his younger brother. He had two younger brothers, Pandu. Pandu had already departed. And the other younger brother was who? Vidura. So Vidura, the chapter begins with, Vidura was insulted by Duryodhana in the royal assembly. And having been insulted so severely, without repeating the ugly words of Duryodhana, because Uddhava, because Vidura had tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to persuade with wisdom and everything that he had in his, you know, arsenal of persuasive, sensible arguments to desist from this diabolical support of, or the support of diabolical Duryodhana to, so that Duryodhana could become king. He was the rightful heir of the kingdom. And so Krishna had come to the royal assembly to make peace. This is the Mahabharata chapter. Krishna came with a message of peace. Let there not be war. You're not entitled to be the king. But you be the king anyways. Go ahead. Take the kingdom. But just give the Pandavas, who are the rightful heir, give them just 5 states. And they'll serve you. You'll be the emperor of the world. And they'll be subservient to you. But they're Kshatriyas. They need a kingdom. So let there not be war. Just give them 5 states. You rule everything else. No. Give them 5 cities. No. Give them 5 villages. There must be war. I cannot live on the same planet with those 5 brothers. Either they are killed or I'm killed. It's a much longer, very elaborate effort, very transcendentally brilliant and powerful message Krishna delivered. And it didn't penetrate the heart of Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra understood, but he was too attached. And his son was diabolical. So Krishna left. And when Krishna left, the way in which Krishna left is a whole other description. Duryodhana and his buddies, they tried to grab Krishna and arrest him and put him in jail. Kill Krishna. That's Duryodhana. Krishna showed a partial manifestation of his universal form. Everybody stood back. Krishna withdrew the universal form, didn't say a word, and left the assembly. Vidura blasted Duryodhana. And then he blasted Dhritarashtra for allowing Duryodhana to do the Duryodhana program. And Duryodhana lost it. And he insulted Vidura so badly. The words are described in the Bhagavatam, in this first canto, in this third canto. He should be driven out of the royal assembly and left with nothing but his breath of life. Get out of here! So Duryodhana departed. Not because, oh, he's insulting me, I'm getting out of here. Rather, he was a great devotee. He couldn't stand to see Krishna insulted, and he couldn't stand to see the will of Krishna neglected. He was nonetheless trying and trying, and he realized, my efforts are insufficient. There's no service for me here anymore. So he left. And he went on pilgrimage. That's what it says at the beginning of Canto 1, Chapter 13. Vidura went on pilgrimage. Doesn't say where he went, but he went on pilgrimage. So a whole bunch of Bhagavatam verses and chapters later, beginning of Canto 3, Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Parikshit, you talked about his going on pilgrimage. Must have been a great pilgrimage. Could you describe where he went and the conversations he had? And you mentioned that before he came back, he heard from Maitreya Muni to his satisfaction and became a perfectly realized soul. That must have been fantastic conversation. Uddhava's way up there. and Maitreya is way up there. Can you share what that conversation was like? Two questions. Where did he go? And what was the conversation between the two? Maitreya and Uddhava, Avidura. That's the beginning of Canto 3, Chapter 1. That's not, you know, systematic and chronological. It's systematic in a different way. Ideologically systematic, but not necessarily chronologically systematic. So, the reply comes, wonderful question. Yes, I'll tell you where he went on pilgrimage, and I'll tell you about that conversation. So, it describes the places that he went on pilgrimage. All the so many holy places throughout all the land. The reason it's said that he went on pilgrimage, when he left the royal assembly, he could have just gone to Krishna. But he felt, I'm so contaminated by this unholy association in the royal palace, I can't go to Krishna in this condition. I have to qualify and purify myself to go to be in Krishna's association. So that's what he did. He went to holy places. And when he went to the holy places, he heard from saintly people. And one of those holy places he went was Dwarka. That's a holy place. That's Krishna's place. Or one of Krishna's places. And when he went to Dwarka, he also went to Prabhas Kshetra. And he knew that the pastime of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty had already taken place at Prabhas Kshetra, that place where they fought with bamboo sticks and killed each other without all the detail. He heard all about it. He was there. Then he continued on his pilgrimage, Vidura, and he went to Vrindavan. And when he was in Vrindavan, he saw Uddhava in the middle of a forest. And when he saw Uddhava in the middle of a forest, he was in ecstasy. And said, "Oh, Uddhava, how are Krishna and Balaram?" Because you see Uddhava, you think of Krishna. He not only looked like Krishna, he's so intimately associated with Krishna. How are Krishna and Balaram? And then he asked all these other things about the members of the Yadu dynasty. How is Ugrasena? And Vasudeva and Devaki. And, you know, the sons of Krishna, this one, that one, the other one, and naming them by names. How are they doing? And although he knew they were already gone. A little surprising. But it was just a spontaneous outpouring. He didn't want to say, "I hope you don't know that they're all dead." Didn't want to say that. So he didn't say that. He did the other thing. And that's chapter 1 of Canto 3. And then comes chapter 2 of Canto 3, where Uddhava is hearing. Vidura's questions about Krishna. So sometimes, you know, we're in a course of our devotional service, somebody asks us a question about Krishna. And because we're not advanced like Uddhava, we don't process it the same way that Uddhava processed it. But I want to read to you what happened when Vidura pressed the Krishna button in Uddhava's chest. Tell me about Krishna, that button. So I just want to read the few verses at the beginning. This is to help encourage you to read Srimad Bhagavatam. When the great devotee Uddhava was asked by Vidura to speak on the messages of the dearest Lord Krishna, Uddhava was unable to answer immediately, due to excessive anxiety at the remembrance of the Lord. Anxiety because what had happened just before Vidura came to that place in the forest in Vrindavan is Krishna had just spoken the entire Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, which isn't here in the third canto, it's in the 11th canto, and it's really big. I'd have to count them, but something like, 12, 14 chapters. A really, really robust discussion. Like Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava Gita. Very elevated subject. Uddhava's just heard that, and Krishna just left. Going back to Dwarka, Krishna called Uddhava and said, Uddhava, my pastimes are over. I'm going to leave the world very soon. And when I leave the world, Kali Yuga is going to begin. It's going to be very ugly, very fast. So I don't want you to be in difficulty. So I want you to go to be in the association of my devotees, the devotees of Nara Narayan Rishi in the Himalayas. Uddhava, please go. Uddhava didn't want to go because he didn't want to leave Krishna. But Krishna told him to go. So he left. He didn't get very far because he was feeling too much separation from Krishna, so he came back to Dwarka. But Krishna had left Dwarka. So he became mad, looking for Krishna. Looking for Krishna. Just like the six Goswamis. Hey Radhe Vrajadevi Kei Chalalite Hey Nanda Suna Sutta. They were always looking for Krishna. Are you on the side of Govardhan Hill? Are you by the banks of the river Jamuna? Krishna, where are you? Krishna, where are you? This was Uddhava. Krishna, where are you? Where do you go to look for somebody? He just wandered here and there, madly looking for Krishna. And then he saw him. It's described in the Bhagavatam. It's so beautiful. Krishna was reclining beneath a young banyan tree with his back leaned up against the trunk of the tree and his long arms down to his knees and his yellow dhoti spread out in front of him and his eyes closed. Uddhava went running, fell at Krishna's feet crying and sobbing and weeping. Krishna said, I knew you couldn't go to like I told you, so I was waiting here. I was expecting you to come. And he had this whole Uddhava Gita section, and then Krishna left. He said, you're not going to see me again. My pastimes are over. I'm leaving this world. But he gave him some service. I had told you to go to the ashram of Naranarayan Rishi. I appeared in this world to give my association to my dear devotees. That's one place I didn't go. So I'm giving you the service on behalf of me to go. And you deliver the message to them that I've just delivered to you. And that will sustain your life. Now you have some service to do. And he left. Never to be seen again by Uddhava. So Vidura came shortly after that, within the same day practically. Krishna left in the morning and he came in the evening. Vidura. And he asked him about Krishna. It's really exciting. Srimad Bhagavatam. Uddhava was unable to answer immediately due to excessive anxiety at the remembrance of Krishna. He was one who, even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, He did not wish to have it. No, mothers that have boys, no, that's not what happens. They're so busy in thought of Krishna, they don't come for breakfast. No. No way. Uddhava served the Lord continually from childhood. And in his old age, that attitude of service never slackened. As soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. Thus, hearing his name, his consciousness was so absorbed with attachment and love in Krishna, just to hear his name, all these wonderful pastimes and all of his feelings and everything in relation to Krishna came gushing forward. That's when you're advanced. So to become advanced, it's a lifetime of the messages. It's a lifetime of service. Service and service and service and service. But not just the mechanical. It's loving kind of service. That's what our lives are meant for. Loving service, and especially the hearing and chanting service, you'll hear in just a moment. Text 4. For a moment he remained dead silent, and his body did not move. He was stunned. It's one of the symptoms of bhava. His consciousness became so absorbed in thought of Krishna. External consciousness was withdrawn, and everything was internally completely condensed and absorbed, focused. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy. And he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy. His remembrance of Krishna became more concentrated and more concentrated and more concentrated, and with that, an inner ecstasy, so absorbed in concentrated thought of Krishna. So he was experiencing inner ecstasy, and externally he was like a stone, motionless. Then, it says, text 5, it was so observed by Vidura that Uddhava had all the transcendental bodily changes due to total ecstasy, and he was trying to wipe away tears of separation from his eyes. Thus Vidura could understand that Uddhava had completely assimilated extensive love for the Lord. He was an advanced devotee. And he became so advanced by the process of remembrance, the process of service, the process of hearing and chanting. So one more verse, and this explains a lot. The great devotee Uddhava soon came back from the abode of the Lord to the human plane. And, wiping his eyes, he awakened his reminiscence of the past and spoke to Vidura in a pleasing mood. So he was struggling with this desire to serve. He knew Vidura. He's Uddhava. He's the chief minister of Krishna. So you know who Vidura was. And Vidura was very dear. Very dear to Krishna. When Krishna went to visit the royal family in Hastinapur, he was invited to have his meal, the royal meal with the royal family. And he said, no, I'm going to go have my meal with Vidura. Although Vidura, by caste, was a Shudra. He was a great devotee, and who wants to eat with these other non-devotees? No, thank you. I'll go to Vidura's home. And Mahabharata describes that the wife of Vidura was so enlivened in ecstasy. There's different versions of Mahabharata. Some say instead of giving the banana, she gave banana peels. And Krishna ate them because they were offered with such love. Another version says she gave porridge. That's like a British term for like, you know, khichdi or soup or something. In other words, not like a high quality royal something or other. But Krishna was very happy to have it because it was offered with love. So it was known that Vidura was such a deep lover of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, the Pandavas. That's Vidura. So he, Uddhava, wanted to serve Vidura. Vidura, his elder, his great devotee of his beloved Krishna. So he wanted to serve him. He was struggling to do what was being asked. Talk about Krishna by Vidura. But he was fighting against his mind being completely absorbed in internal thought of Krishna. In the state of complete ecstasy. He was abandoning the complete ecstasy to go external and the external plane and serve Uncle Vidura. Whew. Listen to the purport. When Uddhava was fully absorbed in the transcendental ecstasy of love of God, he actually forgot all about the external world. The pure devotee lives constantly in the abode of the Supreme Lord, even in the present body, which apparently belongs to this world. This is, you know, always remember Krishna. Don't forget Krishna. He was there. So much so he didn't even, at this moment anyway, he was out of touch with, he was in trance. Consciousness completely withdrawn from the external world. The pure devotee is not exactly on the bodily plane since he is absorbed in the transcendental thought of the Supreme. When Uddhava wanted to speak to Vidura, he came down from the abode of the Lord, Dwarka, to the material plane of human beings. Even though a pure devotee is present on this mortal planet, he is here in relation to the Lord for engagement in transcendental loving service and not for any material cause. Just a little short Prabhupada story about this. I've repeated it many times, but I like it. Prabhupada was visiting Los Angeles. It was just after he had been received in the airport and he had gone to the temple and was seated, saw the darshan of deities and was seated in his little room. Maybe some of you have seen his rooms in Los Angeles temple. So he was seated in his room and the devotees were, you know, like little honeybees around a pot of honey and wanting to hear whatever nectar Prabhupada was going to say. So it was, you know, big fanfare because Prabhupada had been away for quite some time and huddled around his little desk there. And he said, I know that my devotees, you are always engaged in hearing what is Prabhupada doing now? And then he said something like, you know, he's in India, but very soon he's going to go to Hong Kong and then Japan. And visit the devotees there. And he did this and did that. And then he went to Australia and New Zealand and he visited these places and these exchanges took place. And then he went to Hawaii and very soon he is coming here to Los Angeles. So I know you like to do like that, but please, you should understand, I'm not in any of those places. I'm always with Krishna. So externally doing some service, but internally always with Krishna. And that was Uddhava's situation. His love for Krishna was so intense, he completely lost external consciousness. anybody who's struggling to come back to that plane to do some service for Uddhava, for Vidura. A living entity can live either on the material plane or in the transcendental abode of the Lord in accordance with his existential condition, his consciousness. Then, Prabhupada is going to now paraphrase and summarize the unfolding of the creeper of devotion. The conditional changes of the living entity are explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the instructions given to Srila Rupa Goswami by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is Madhya Lila chapters 28, 29, something like that. Quote, the living entities all over the universes are enjoying the effects of their respective fruitive results of their own work. You know, all varieties of life are experiencing whatever they're experiencing due to their past deeds. Out of all of them, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service. Got it? That answers one of the questions that I was, the seeming contradiction questions. The seed that's received by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, by which devotional service begins, is the taste, he's using this word taste, or the eagerness to serve Krishna. And that's, you know, for all of us. In the beginning stage, it's just little, we like serving Krishna. We like a whole bunch of other stuff, and we also, you know, there's something nice about serving Krishna. To receive that taste for serving Krishna, that comes through the association of devotee of Krishna, and it awakens the unfolding of the already existing Krishna prema, that's also appropriately spoken of as a seed. Nitya siddha Krishna prema. It's already there. I mean, it's just not only, it's the nature of the soul. It's already there. But it's dormant, like a seed can be dormant. So that a dormant seed becomes awakened by the association of devotees who bring about this taste for serving, and serving starts with hearing. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, it starts with hearing. That's service. What we're doing right now is devotional service. Hearing and chanting, and then remembering, like Uddhava is doing. Because of hearing and chanting and serving, when he's asked by Vidura, please speak about Krishna. He's so deeply absorbed in remembrance. His speaking is going to be also. Whew. The next three chapters are way up there. He doesn't stop once he starts. He talks about Krishna, and talks about Krishna, and talks about Krishna, and talks about Krishna, talks about Krishna in Vrindavan, talks about Krishna outside of Vrindavan, talks about Krishna. He loves Krishna. He can't stop talking about Krishna. It's like, you know, one of these pop songs. Can't stop talking about him. Or her. But it's transcendental. And it's a different kind of a mood. So, I'll read it again. out of all the conditioned souls that are moving about according to their fruit of activities, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service, and one who is fortunate enough to have received such a seed is advised to sow the seed in the core of his heart. As one cultivates a seed by pouring water to fructify it, the seed of devotional service sown in the heart of the devotee may be cultured by pouring water in the form of hearing and chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord, just like we're doing this evening. The holy name and the pastimes of the Lord. That creeper of devotional service, so nourished, gradually grows. And the devotee, acting as a gardener, goes on pouring the water of constant hearing and chanting. The creeper of devotional service gradually grows so high that it passes through the entire material universe and enters the spiritual sky, growing still higher and higher until it reaches the Goloka Vrindavan planet. The devotee-gardener is in touch with the abode of the Lord even from the material plane by dint of performing devotional service simply by hearing and chanting. As a creeper takes shelter of another, stronger tree, similarly the creeper of devotional service, nourished by the devotee, takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and thus becomes fixed. When the creeper is fixed, then the fruit of the creeper comes into existence, and the gardener who nourished it is able to enjoy this fruit of love, and his life becomes successful. Unquote. Isn't that beautiful? That Uddhava had attained this stage is evident from his dealings. He could simultaneously reach the supreme planet and still appear in this world. The Srimad Bhagavatam that you've invited into your home is Krishna in his literary form, and just by clinging, like the creeper clings to the tree and then can grow, by regularly hearing, that's the watering, metaphorical watering process of that desire to serve, that creeper will grow and grow, and it clings to the tree. The Bhagavatam, the message of the Bhagavatam is so nourishing. It's both the means and the end. Because it's Krishna Katha, so it's the Swarup Shakti of the Lord, and it's also the Lord. It's mystical. So you're mature persons who have spent your life most likely in many wonderful ways of serving others in pious activities and so forth, and now comes Krishna into your home where that serving propensity and inquisitive propensity to know more and understand more and become more spiritualized in your lives, that the best of all opportunities is now with you. Literally Krishna himself. So please avail yourself regularly. Read Srimad Bhagavatam. And your life will completely transform in a very wonderful way. It's transformational, transcendental literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. It's associating directly with Krishna. As the holy name, so also the Srimad Bhagavatam. Any comments? Yes?
Ramanuj, in the stages of unfolding faith, we hear Adavashvabhata, our sadhu samvara, the ruchi. So ruchi, there's taste.
Yeah.
So is that...
just a different application of the term.
That's a different application than...
Same term, different application.
So here, Prabhupada's writing the book that this taste is the seed of the book.
This taste is has a different application. I'm saying it the third time.
Well, my question is, so for example, like if we're out at, you know, for Harinam Sankirtan and someone hears the holy name, I'm not understanding this statement in the context of that situation where, you know...
If they have a desire to serve, that the taste is the desire to serve. So let's take another example. You're out on Harinam Sankirtan and you're experiencing great happiness just chanting the holy name. Or then it's your turn, you go and distribute some books and people receive these books and their faces light up and, you know, it's some kind of a mystical experience that's just very wonderful. It's not you. It's, you know, the reciprocation with that soul who's been journeying for who knows how long, and now comes the opportunity, and it's you know, such this nice experience. Or, you know, like this Chinese girl that is now starting to chant, you know, learning and so forth. What she's undergoing, that's a taste for something other than whatever was going on before. And to be the instrument for her, that's taste. And for you, it's also just the happiness of serving. That's a different application of the term. In a more strict sense, it's that very elevated stage. And the symptoms of that elevated stage are described in Madhurya Kadambini and elsewhere. But specifically, one more time, this application is just, you know, the desire to do some service. And you know, like, you know, the happiness of a mother taking care of her child and to the happiness of a mother taking that soul, her child, towards Krishna. It's another happiness altogether. He wants your attention. Anyone else? Yeah.
I have one question.
Okay.
You just mentioned that, and I read Canto 1 a little bit, not too much, but...
Ah. Okay.
And that's how I got interested in wanting to get the whole set in my house. So, when you read the Canto 1, you find that the chronological order of narration between different people is different.
Yes.
And so I haven't read the whole thing, so to really put everything together to understand how everything has been put together, but you mentioned that one is chronological and the other is ideological. So, would you kindly elaborate on that?
Sure. Vyasadeva, the events are actual events. They're not fiction. It's history. It's Puranic. It's history. Actual history. But the writing down or the recording of that history is not this happened, then that happened, then that happened, that kind of a history. It's not that kind of a history. It's a unfolding of consciousness narration such that this may be described here and then later that's described there and then later that's described there. That's all part of a chronological sequence, but it's placed here and there for a different reason of developing or the consciousness or polishing the diamond. Sitting in the dentist chair, you know, the dentist gets out the big drill and then the little fine one and then the big one again, a little fine one. You know, it's just, you know, because they know what they're doing. They're, hopefully they know what they're doing. They're dentists. I just had an implant. Then the crown or whatever they call the thing. So he was making sure that the bite works right. So, you know, bite down, move your, grind your teeth. and looked at the film to see, so where's it hitting? He got, okay, now try it again. Then do it more finely. He, like that. So Vyasadeva knows how to take the consciousness of the Kali Yuga personalities to the Krishna. So in just as a for example, he mentions Vidura's leaving the royal palace and he goes on pilgrimage, he meets Maitreya, he comes back to the palace to deliver Dhritarashtra. It's specific to, you know, an attached man hearing what he needs to become unattached, Dhritarashtra being the attached man. And the person who is capable of relieving him of that attachment is one who has gained the association, as Vidura had gained the association of Uddhava and then Maitreya. Now he came back transformed, because before that association he was brilliant and everyone regarded him as such, but still didn't have the potency to lift Dhritarashtra. Now he has the potency and Dhritarashtra has lost everything. So it's let go of those attachments message in the first canto. Then in the third canto, there's Vidura meeting first Uddhava, and then several chapters later he meets Maitreya. And it goes for like 2.5-3 cantos. Discussions between Maitreya and Vidura. It's only mentioned over here in first canto. It's not chronological, but it's then the discussion that took place between Krishna and Uddhava is just mentioned in the third canto, and it's elaborately discussed in the 11th canto. So it's going more deeply in philosophical points as well as deeper moods of devotion, but largely the Uddhava Gita is deeper philosophical points. Which maybe, you know, one could make it, yeah, well, if I was Vyasadeva, I would have put that in the first canto. Because it's deeper philosophy. But, you know, he knows what he's doing. So it's helping persons come to the stage of complete absorption in Krishna. That's the ideological as opposed to chronological. And other things, the examples could be given. Yes. Shari.
It was very interesting and inspiring to hear about Uddhava's intense deep love for Krishna.
Mm.
So Krishna, like, in detail, explained a lot to Uddhava, lot of instructions, which I'm not sure about the more detailed things. But my question is, why it's named as Uddhava Gita?
Why not?
Is there any specific, usually, like, Krishna talked to Arjuna and it's, you know, we got like Bhagavad Gita, which we know that it's named after Krishna, like Bhagavad Gita. So is there any specific, I was just wondering on that.
I didn't give it the name, I don't know why it was given the name. What's your other question?
So we hear that, like, whenever the great personalities goes to pilgrimage, so they usually travel all over India. So is that like Vidura also went to south side?
Yeah, he went everywhere. He went all over the place. In the first chapter of Canto 3, it mentions where he went. Just like, as another example is when Lord Nityananda, when he was young, he traveled with that sannyasi to so many places, and it's mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat where he went. Not just north, not just south, but all around. Okay, now your next question.
Yes, thank you very much. So I was trying to maybe a clarification. So like chicken and egg thing. So we have the the seed of Krishna Prema within us, and already there is a devotional service there.
Because it's because in the seed form it's already there.
Seed form. So my understanding is that, like through by Krishna's mercy, by Guru, that this seed, which is in dormant state, gets
awakened.
Gets awakened and it started to grow by Shravanam, Kirtanam.
It grows further by Shravanam, Kirtanam, but this language of seed is used. Again, it's a different application of the same term. The seed is service, or the desire to serve. So, here's a really simple example. Most mothers cook. And then, devotee mothers, they also cook. But they learn cooking for Krishna. And it's the happiness of cooking for Krishna is not the same as the happiness of cooking for family or cooking for a livelihood or cooking for Krishna. That's the seed. To learn to receive that awakening of the desire to do what we do for Krishna. That's the seed that's being spoken of here, and the taste that's also being spoken of here.
So it's been linked.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Maharaj, I still couldn't get the relationship between Uddhava and Krishna. You mentioned that Uddhava was with Krishna when he was...
Didn't say he was with Krishna. He was serving Krishna when he was little. He wasn't in Vrindavan. Krishna was in Vrindavan. He was a member of the Yadu dynasty. Now I'm doing my best guess because I don't know for certain. Because the best guess goes like this: Krishna, the Yadu dynasty was primarily based in Mathura. When Ugrasena was dethroned in Mathura by his son Kamsa and put in prison, the ruling capital was still Mathura. So the Yadu dynasty was residing there. So that's where he was, Uddhava. So when Krishna went to Mathura, Uddhava was there because he's part of the Yadu dynasty. After some time, the 22nd time that Jarasandha came, along with Kaliyavana came, seeing the difficulty, Krishna arranged for Vishwakarma to build Dwarka, which means before that, there was no Dwarka as happened during Krishna's pastimes, because Vishwakarma built Dwarka. But it's mentioned that there was always a historical, ancestral connection for the Yadu dynasty between the two places, Mathura and Dwarka. So that's like inductive reasoning. It's not like I don't know where Uddhava was when he was 5 years old and worshipping Krishna and meditating on Krishna like that. It's just inductive. The Yadu dynasty was there. He took birth in the Yadu dynasty. They were related. They're in family relation. In addition to being his friend, but as Arjuna was his cousin. So.
Was
Vidura also what?
Uddhava cousin to Krishna.
Well. Second cousin. Yeah. Well, uncle. Not cousin, uncle. Vidura was uncle because
Huh? I'm asking about Uddhava.
Uddhava.
Yeah.
Oh, the exact relation I don't know. I could research it, but you know, right sitting here right now, I don't know. Related within amongst the royal family for sure, but exactly, you know, how that connection worked, you know, who Uddhava's mother and father were, and how they had fit in with the whole of the Adu dynasty. I'd have to research. Not something commonly expressed.
Uddhava is not mentioned in Mahabharata. That's why there is a gap in our knowledge about Uddhava, because Uddhava is not there in Mahabharata at all.
Yeah.
Somehow in Bhagavatam. There are people in Bhagavatam that are not in Mahabharata.
Yeah.
That's also a little gap. And most of us
are familiar with Mahabharata and not so familiar with Bhagavatam.
More familiar with Mahabharata.
Yeah. Are we ready for RT? Okay. Oh, you have a question?
In the nine prophecies of Vaishnava service, you know, we hear of Arjuna as the one who exemplifies Sakya. And you were saying that Uddhava is even dearer to Krishna than Arjuna. So just a question of perfect and most perfect? And
something like that. He was. His perfection didn't come specifically in that same way, you know, as friend, although he was friend. He just intimately served Krishna so much. I mean, we don't have Madhumangala mentioned or other of Krishna friends. Sridham, there's no mention of Sridham. It's Arjuna. Okay.